Hi, I'm Arthur Rasmussen. I'm the co-author on a piece of software called libvfio. We presented this talk a short time earlier at XDC 2021. It's the XORG Developer Conference. But unfortunately, we had a few problems with our audio. So what I've just done here is I've put together just a little re-recording. So hopefully we don't have any issues in terms of the audio with this. So what I'll do first is I'm going to share my screen. So I have some slides here that we'll give very quickly right before we run through our demo. Yep. So we're ArcCompute. We work at a company here in Toronto. Our business primarily does virtual private server VPS stuff. So we do particularly GPU accelerated virtual private server stuff. And what we have decided to do as of a few months ago is to make a large portion of our software open source. So what we're doing today is we are looking at some of these problems and we're thinking about how can we help not just address these problems for ourselves, but address these problems hopefully in a way that is more for the general benefit of users who have felt some of these pain points like ourselves. So the issue that we see in many cases is that if you're a user of a graphics card, if you want to run a Linux operating system on your host, you end up in a situation where, a lot of people will buy a really good computer, they'll get a good graphics card, and they'll think, hey, I want to play my games. And, those games don't work on Linux. Or if they do work on Linux, they don't work great, or there's, questions around compatibility when new games come out. And a lot of people who would run Linux, they just end up running Windows because it's kind of the de facto, everything will work. That's kind of, the story. So unfortunately, if you do want to do any kind of graphics sharing functionality where you take the drivers for your graphics card and you run them inside of a virtual machine and in the host system at the same time, really what you end up with or what you're left with is, you can either work with something like AMD GIM. So this is their GPU IOV module, which is unfortunately not a great experience on most hardware, or you can run NVIDIA GRID, which is of course, locked to very expensive hardware, the data center cards, and you have to pay monthly in order to use it. So this is out of reach for the vast majority of people. At the same time, because of this functionality being sort of locked out, the opportunity to load balance GPU workloads, it's simply not in modern operating systems. People aren't creating functionality to look at the resources or the scheduling time of the GPU, or the, let's say, allocation of memory. And they're not really able to do a lot of things that you are able to do with mediated device drivers, where you can lock certain address ranges to certain virtual functions, and you can control the scheduling with a great deal of granularity. So with those problems in mind, we put together some solutions for that. So the two pieces of software that we're making available today are libvfio and the program that integrates that library, which is what we're calling Hyperborea. So libvfio has enabled us at ArcCompute to do industry best dedicated VPS prices for GPU compute. We've got what we think is some of the most aggressive pricing on GPU in the world, especially in dedicated virtual private servers. One of the things that I think I left in there, this is a slide from another presentation, is that we do have a dedicated support team. But for libvfio and Hyperborea in general, we are enabling sort of this ability to do GPU multi-tenancy features, creating virtual machines, sharing it between the host and the guest systems. It's all very, sort of seamless piece of software. It sort of integrates that all in one component, and it automates the creation of the vGPUs when we're, creating new VMs. It automates the pairing of it, and it sort of auto load balances a lot of that sort of stuff. Today, one of the things that we're making available in the open source is actually the ability to use this capability on, all consumer or most consumer NVIDIA cards. So what I'm going to present in a moment, what I'm going to show in a moment is actually an example of something that's running on an NVIDIA consumer card. As well, we're supporting a limited number of AMD GPU devices. So devices that we have in consumer contexts been able to hack. So for example, this If you're an enthusiast of libvfio, you might know this. It's been possible for a little while to hack the W7100 cards from AMD to enable the vGPU functionality if you'd like to work with that. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is working with the Intel DG series cards. So this card in particular, this is the Intel DG1. They are now marketing their Intel Arc GPUs. That in particular, with the Arc GPU, is sort of intended to be a version of the graphics card that has none of the sort of market segmentation for this virtual GPU type of functionality. So if the very low end, this was a card that we harvested out of a $500 or $700 all-in machine, we're able to get this graphics card out. And this GPU is able to create the vGPU stuff, so the virtual functions that are necessary to forward to the VMs, even at the lowest price point, so the very, very low-end part. And that's going to apply through the mid-end and the high-end parts as well. So there's no real fragmentation in the availability of those APIs through the Intel parts. So that that is very exciting. So we're supporting now today those devices and the tools in order to actually launch a virtual machine with that are going to be available at libvf.io, which you can see the link for at the bottom of the screen. So this work, I have to be clear about all this. I am standing on the shoulders of giants, working with really awesome people. So I can't take credit really at all for a lot of this stuff. The building blocks are there. I'm just kind of gluing things together. So Wendell Wilson, somebody I really have a lot to, somebody who I owe a lot to. So he has encouraged me through career changes, our career direction changes. He's encouraged me and helped me, at least in the area where we share some common interests, which is in this VFIO stuff. And he certainly has, caused the community to explode through his work. And in our personal interactions, he's been very helpful for me as well in a whole variety of different contexts. Jeffrey McRae Gniff, he is, in my personal opinion, the authority on this subject in a lot of different places. He's written really excellent tools like Looking Glass, which we're going to have a look at in a moment, which is running behind me. And he's also written some excellent blog posts and forum posts on the subject of virtual GPUs and how exactly to use them. So Michael Buchel, he's the co-author of libvfio with me. He's also responsible for refactoring a lot of very cringy, sometimes not functional code that I've written. And he'll often go back, fix some of those code quality issues up before we go and release them as open source. James Borst, he is an advisor to us. He's been extremely helpful throughout our business. We wouldn't be here without him. Shervin is one of our software developers who's working on some of our web stack stuff. Sander, who's also helping to work with libvfio, also extremely helpful. So that is the slide. So now that we're done with that, I am going to just exit out quickly and we will we'll resume with the demo. So what you can see running behind me is a graphics system that's actually running on a single graphics card. So this I can show you really quickly. So this machine, it has a single graphics card. So that single graphics card, the resources that it's using are actually being shared between a virtual machine and the host system at the same time. And the creation and the management of the vGPU interfaces, so the virtual functions, the parsing of the IOMMU groups, the pairing of the virtual function to the virtual machine, all of that is handled by libvfio. So what I'll do here is I'll actually show we can shut this VM down. We'll reboot it. And you can actually see in real time us sort of going through and making that work. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm just going to purge all of the actively running VMs. And then what I'm going to do is restart it. So while we're doing that, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to run a host graphics program. So in this case, this is TuxRacer, which is one of the better games on Linux for graphics programs. So while that's running, you can actually see the resources being used by the host. And as you can see over here, what we've done is we've gone through, you can't really see it because the text scrolls too quickly. This is parsing the IOMMU groups. Then from the parsed IOMMU groups, it's going and it's targeting a particular device. When it finds the device that it's going to target, what it then does is it creates a mediated device. That mediated device, what then happens is that it's bound to a VFIO driver, which essentially keeps it from being initialized by the host. Then it's automatically paired to a guest operating system. And then that guest operating system, it goes in, it spawns up. So right now we're actually copying a file from a base image. So that base image is like a virtual machine image that is essentially like a template. So when the template clone is finished, which you can see it is just finished, it's booting up the virtual machine with that mediated device driver attached to it. And then as you'll see right here, what we're doing is we're using Looking Glass, which is that project from GNIF. So he is doing here a, clicked the wrong link there. This is a technique for doing copyless DMA transfer of frames between the guest operating system and the host operating system. So it's extremely low latency graphics drawing. So the whole point of this is that if we actually look here, you can see this is running at about 200 frames a second. While we are running resources on the host operating system and the guest operating system at the same time. So it's able to do the VFIO sharing in the same kind of sense that you would think if you're getting a separate graphics card and passing that in, which is kind of the traditional way to do VFIO. But at the same exact time, what it's able to do is able to use the same resources for the host operating system without necessarily requiring that wholly dedicated card. So now that that is running, just to kind of show you, see if I can get out of that. So this is in fact interactive. So you can see it's sort of working. Yeah, no problem at all. And as far as the performance of this, this can handle stuff, 4K graphics can handle, 60, 90, 120 frames a second, no problem at all. And the latencies are, they're unnoticeable. They're so low that it really feels like a native experience. So what this is meant to address is not just needs in the context of the server, which is where we initially went and wrote this technology for. It's meant to address some of the concerns that people have when they're running virtual machines at home, or when they're thinking about how they're going to run their applications at home and making a decision about which operating system to choose. So with these tools all combined together, utilized by libvfio, you can feel empowered today without a lot of work to go home and to create a virtual machine which has the same kind of performance that you would expect from a native system. So the idea is that, if people take a look at this as a way potentially to improve some of their experiences with regard to the way that they, expect applications to run or where they expect to use their home operating system, it might be possible to get some of the people who have been on the fence about using Linux over into Linux and, participating in open source because they'll have the confidence that while they're able to do things on their, open source operating system, that the games that they want and expect from the high-end machine that they're using, or the mid-ed machine or whatever that they want to run games on, those will still be there and that the experience will not be substantially different. So today this is open source. This is open source at libvf.io. We really welcome a lot of people to come and help us with the open source aspect of this. We really want contributions. We want to work with vendors. We really, really want to work with the guys from Intel, who I personally believe are doing some of the most important work in advancing this cause. So the guys who are working on Intel GBTG, you're doing a great job. Really believe in what you're doing. And in the long run, my hope is that this technology will proliferate across all the vendors, and that the consumers ultimately will be the people to benefit. So yeah, that's more or less the talk. So thank you so much for giving us the time to listen to what we had to say. You can reach me again on Twitter. It's ArcVRArthur, on Telegram at Dopefish, and via email at Arthur@arcompute.com. So thanks so much. And please come check out our open source and, you know, send us some pull requests, send us some issues, deploy our software, try it, tell if it's, you know, tell us if it's a good experience, tell us where the things are not working, and, you know, participate in helping us build a community up around this. We're starting from a little group of guys who put some of this stuff together for our own reasons. You know, I would really love the opportunity to see if other people find value in this. And if there is value in this for other people, then maybe, you know, getting some help with things and improving what can be improved and building up a community. So thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
You have an open source driver in Mesa for current generation hardware. You have machine-readable documentation for that architecture in Mesa, and you're about to be certified conformant when the vendor of the hardware comes out and deprecates the architecture, releases a new architecture, and doesn't document it or release open source drivers for it. What do you do? Well, you reverse engineer it, of course. But the vendor does give you one little secret. They tell you that there is operational equivalence between the instructions in the new architecture and the instructions in the old architecture. But wait, you had machine-readable documentation for the old architecture, so there's no new reverse engineering needed, there's no new concepts, no new execution model. All you have to do is map the new encodings to the old encodings. This is certainly a tedious job, and it'll take you a few months of work, but there's nothing conceptually impossible here. And more so, you have the potential to do incredible reverse engineering in terms of the level of detail to go for perfect, not just good enough. You could even match the vendor syntax, confuse them a little bit if you'd like. So great, you reverse engineer it, and what do? Well, you should release documentation for it, or write documentation for it. The vendor was clearly unable to, maybe they ran out of time, maybe they didn't understand how important it is to release documentation for their hardware, but being the good, upstanding community member you are, you do the right thing and write documentation for it and publish it so everybody can understand the hardware, and you're really helping out the vendor there with their own hardware. What do you do after that? Well, it would be even better to have a disassembler and an assembler, both open source and upstream in Mesa. And again, being the great community member you are, you write those and upstream them. The vendor will thank you profusely, I'm sure of it. From there, of course, you want to have a full driver written, not just some documentation. How do you manage that? Well, we know that there is this operational equivalence between the instructions on the old hardware and the instructions on the new hardware. And we already have a conformant compiler for the old hardware. So all we have to do is extend the old compiler to produce the new encodings. We can reuse all of the instruction selection and all of the optimization passes with very few changes. So that's all we need. And with another few weeks of effort, you can spin up a prototype targeting the new hardware and upstream that code. And before you know it, you have a Mesa driver upstream to this new hardware, all open source, no mysteries, open documentation, and the hardware vendor only has you to thank for it. This is the story of the ARM-Mali G78 with support coming into Mesa now. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. I want to give you a quick overview about a project or an initiative which is going on in freedesktop.org Radiant Protocols. It's the Input Method Hub, how it's called. And the idea about it is to assess and document and think about two protocols which there are in Radiant Protocols. The text input and the input method protocol, and their purpose is to control software composited text, as I would describe it. So it just means that instead of having like a physical keyboard to input text, you have some kind of software component. And if you look at the bottom, you have two examples for that, like a virtual keyboard, or for example, like an input method editor for often Asian languages need this for having to cover all the different characters that there are. So there are already protocols for that, embedded protocols. A set, text input, and input method are the main ones. But there are different versions of these protocols, and actually some protocol, some projects use the protocols from freedesktop.org. Others have different versions of them. So there isn't yet a common standard for that. And the input method hub wants to change that. And what is the input method hub? It's basically an issue ticket in the Wayland protocols repository. So just give you a quick view of that. I already opened it. So that is the issue ticket. And yeah, you can see here, it's here's the first of all, some introduction and motivation for you to see, to understand what it is about. So it's the issue ticket number 39, but you will find it as usual in GitHub. There is a description of the challenges that there are, and especially to give you an overview what this stuff actually does. This graphic, I didn't include it in the presentation because you can see it here, and it basically means you have an input method provider on the one side, which is client, and a text input clients, which then receive this text, which the input method client sent. So, and yeah, you have here some more description of the different protocols versions, which there are, right? So there are lots of different ones, and here upstream and downstream. And you have kind of a neat implementation matrix, I would say, because it shows you which project currently implements which standard, right? So we have here version 1, version 2 of input method, text input, right? There is even a rather obscure one, the Qt text input method protocol, which is only used by Qt. So the idea is to put this all together or share or find a common ground to have then a final version of these protocols, which can be shared over all protocols. And yeah, that's what the ticket is for. And the current progress is that, as said, the ticket is there to provide an overview of the existing protocols. And we want to branch out version 4 protocols, which already happened, right? There is a work branch for that in the Wayland protocols repository. And we want to collect requirements for the new protocols, right? There is, if you look in Wayland protocols number 39 issue, going back here into the related issues, right, or linked issues, then you can find here, for example, a ticket which which tries to gather all the requirements which one side of the protocol needs. And there's a lot of feedback already, so it's quite good to see many people interested in that. So the current status, lots of feedback, but only from one side of the protocol yet. So there's not so much feedback yet from the text input side. So that's something to look into more. But there's, interestingly, I noticed today, a Qt prototype for the next text input version, which we are currently working on. So that would be then version 4, right? Or the version which is currently being published on this next branch. So what needs to happen next? I think all this feedback needs to be assessed and documented or gathered, and then we need to find a scope for these new protocols, and we need to create a protocol graph. And I think that could be done by a single document developer if he works on that for 1 month. So that's maybe something to look into very next to push this initiative forward. So thanks for listening.
Hello, my name is Ricardo Garcia. I work at Igalia, and today I'm going to talk about VK-EXT Multidraw. It's a Vulkan extension that was published this year, and as part of Igalia's collaboration with Valve, I had the chance to participate in its release process by reviewing the specification text in detail and providing feedback, and by creating conformance tests for it in the VK-GL CTS project. So, BKEXT Multithreading is an extension that was created to cover a gap that existed between the OpenGL and Vulkan APIs. OpenGL has the multithreading arrays and multithreading elements draw calls, which didn't have an equivalent in Vulkan. So Mike Blumenkrantz, working as a Valve contractor, created the extension to be able to use it in sync and to ease implementing that part of OpenGL on top of Vulkan. But the extension can be useful for more people and situations, obviously. So with this extension, you can record multiple draw calls without changing a state between each call, using a single function call. So it avoids the typical CPU overhead caused by checking common buffer state with each draw call. In fact, if you're working on a Vulkan implementation, you can also use this extension as some kind of reference to improve the efficiency of state checking in draw calls, for example. The new APIs introduced by the extension are similar to the indirect family of draw calls, but they don't need a GPU accessible memory, so they complement the existing set of draw calls nicely. The extension adds a couple of new draw calls. CMD draw multi is equivalent to calling CMD draw multiple times in a row, and CMD draw multi indexed is the equivalent when using index buffers. The mechanism is the same in both cases. Given the original draw command function, the extension extracts a couple of arguments to a multi-draw information structure. These will be the draw parameters that will change in each draw operation. You can store an array of those structures in host memory and use that array with the new multi-draw function by passing the number of them and a pointer to the array as arguments to the new function. Then the common buffer, the instance count, and the first instance arguments don't change between draw calls, and they have the same value they would have in the normal draw command function. The remaining argument is a stride that indicates how many bytes to step over to find the next information structure in memory for each draw call. So normally it would be the size of the structure, but you can also use other values. So for example, if you use zero, you only need one structure, which is used over and over draw count times. But you can also use interleave information structures with other data in memory, and then use a bigger stride to jump over the extra data. The equivalent function with index buffers is pretty similar. Some arguments are moved to a structure. Then you use an array of structures in host memory and pass the count and a pointer to the new function. And some other arguments don't change and would have the same value as in the non-multi case, which leaves a couple of arguments to be explained. So the stride is similar to the previous case, and the vertex buffer, the vertex offset pointer is optional and lets you specify a constant value for the vertex offset if you know that parameter is going to have the same value in every structure in the array. This way you can, if you want, you can save some memory, and you can also save some CPU in the application and in the driver. The extension had input from more people than the ones you see here, but I thought it was fair to give at least a shout out to Mike, who created the extension and provided the implementations for Anvil and RedV, which I used when creating the conformance tests. Jason from Intel, who was involved since the beginning and reviewed the initial version of the specification, and also to Pierce Daniel from NVIDIA, who was involved early in Kronos and reviewed the specification and provided an implementation of the extension outside of MISA, which is pretty cool, and I also used it when writing the extension tests. And with this, thanks for watching, and see you.
Hello everyone, welcome to my Lightning Talk SDL, the quest for Wayland by default. As a really quick intro, I've been porting games for 10 years full time. My 68th game comes out at the end of the month, so if you want that wonderful golden number coming up next, please email me, because that slot is in fact open. SDL is what my entire catalog uses. It's what pretty much every Linux game uses and what every big Linux game engine uses. So like Unity, Unreal, Source, GameMaker's IDE just recently started using it. It's hard to find a game that doesn't use it. And so for SDL, We actually default to X, which is no surprise to anyone. We've been using it for a very long time. But what might be more of a surprise is that we actually have had Wayland support in SDL for quite a while. It just hasn't been considered production ready because there's lots of things we have to do. And we have pretty much done all of those things, except there are a couple that are still pretty major. And we're going to go over those issues today. The big tracker that I sort of threw together in the form of a pull request is in that link. Most of what we have left at this point are just bugs. So like keyboard and text, there are a couple problems that were just caused by me not knowing what I'm doing with XKB Common or the text input protocol. So if you're familiar with either of those, you could probably jump in there and fix them in like a day. There are some wishlist items, but they're not that big of a deal. So we're not considering them mission critical. Because really, when you actually go and run a game with SDL with Wayland enabled, you'll find the experience pretty much feels complete at this point. We have client-side decorations, finally. We have full-screen toggling working, high DPI works, input's pretty much there. With a recent desktop and a recent SDL, it feels pretty darn good, except when it doesn't. So we have basically the two major blockers, and the first one you can see right here, the first blocker is opaque presentation, because as it turns out, a lot of games, mine included, use alpha in the back buffer, because we actually do use the alpha channel internally, but we just weren't expecting that compositors might actually use the alpha channel as transparent. Crazy, right? Alpha as transparency? Yeah, didn't see that coming. But problem is, there are lots of games that use this, and not all of them are going to get updated, so we need something in SDL that lets us kind of preserve original behavior, because we don't want to tell Wayland to not do transparent rendering, because you know there are genuine reasons to actually support that. So in this case, we saw that in Vulkan there's already something that basically fixes this, but there isn't an EGL version, so we just decided to make an extension. And by we, I mean Eric, because Eric designed, documented, implemented basically everything. So thank you to Eric for basically doing all the work on this. But yeah, it's in the EGL registry. SDL uses it. NVIDIA's acknowledged it, so it'll be in a driver at some point. The Mesa implementation is done, but we don't have a test. There's an SDL sample that acts as a test, but it's not, as far as I know, it's not sufficient for CI. I could be wrong on that. But if you like making test programs, go to that link. We could really use a test, because then it can go in the next Mesa release. Less finished is the other blocker, which is surface suspension, because basically what happens is when a window isn't visible, the compositor has all the permission in the world to block presentation and stall the program forever, which from an energy efficiency standpoint kind of makes sense, because like regular applications using like GTK or Qt or whatever probably don't care. But games absolutely do not tolerate being stalled for any reason whatsoever. Like, absolutely zero tolerance. I could go on for a whole hour about why this doesn't work and why there's no way around it. Just know that it doesn't work and we need a way around it. My original idea when I first found this bug was, well, let's do swap buffers with timeout. Like, once again, just going back to Vulkan, which has timeout in presentation, let's just rip that off and make an EGL extension. The problem is that, I mean, other than design, like, the design isn't that hard, but actually fixing it in the back catalog for all applications, as well as getting Vulkan to use it, because it turns out nobody in the Vulkan world uses timeout, as it turns out. Basically, there's, like, a lot of reasons why, even though this is a decent idea, in practice, it wouldn't actually fix the catalog very well. Unlike the other thing, which definitely would do a lot better, is something that Joshua Ashton from the DXVK team kind of came up with, which is a protocol. It doesn't really change behavior in any way. It just tells the applications what the compositor is doing. So when a window surface is suspended, it just fires an event saying, yes, we're suspended. And when it's back, it fires an event saying, okay, now it's not suspended. It's a very simple little protocol. It's very easy to integrate. Like, SDL already has a patch. EGL and Vulkan have prototypes that work. And we have, you know, a prototype on the server side too, which is great. Problem is the spec wording, it hasn't been finished yet. Like, there's a lot of review going on there. There are a lot of questions about presentation implementations. So like, what to do, like, so should we keep the frame? Should we queue them? Should we just drop them entirely and expect that the application will redraw when it's unsuspended? Like, there's a lot of very particular details about an extension that really is simple, but there's a lot of scary questions, and smart people are talking about this now. So if you go to that link, you can look at the discussion. I really would like for this to be wrapped up soon, because this is probably the most serious bug by far. And we need this to be fixed for Wayland to be the default in SDL. Like, it's pretty much non-negotiable. So I'm probably over time. I don't know, because I don't have a clock. But basically, go to these links if you want to follow me, ask me questions, sponsor me, hire me, all that stuff. Do whatever you want. Thanks for your time, and have a wonderful XTC. Thanks, everybody.